Good morning, Fairview. Gary has given us three readings today. The first is Isaiah chapter 42, 6 through 7. I am the Lord. I have called you in righteousness. I have taken you by the hand and kept you. I have given you as a covenant to the people, a light to the nations, to open the eyes that are blind, to bring out the prisoners from the dungeon, from the prison, those who sit in darkness. John chapter 8, 2 through 11. Early in the morning, he came again to the temple. All the people came to him, and he sat down and began to teach them. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery, and making her stand before all of them, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery. Now, in the law of Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say?" They said this to test him, so that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "Let anyone among you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." And once again, he bent down and wrote on the ground. When they heard it, they went away, one by one, beginning with the elders, and Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus straightened up and said to her, "Woman, where are they?" And Jesus, "He has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, sir." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go your way, and from now on, do not sin again." And the last selection is from Galatians, the third chapter, chapter 28. There is no longer Jew or Greek. There is no longer slave or free. There is no longer male and female, for all of you are one in Jesus Christ. Amen.
The title of the message today, "It's a Wonderful Church, Making a Difference," is designed to reflect the title of the movie. I'm glad there are many people here that are old enough to know this movie. wherein George Bailey wrestles with the question, "Does my life make a difference?" What was that movie?
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. And George Bailey, played by Jimmy Stewart, asked this question, inside and outside, "Does my life really make a difference?" In this matter, a later writer, Stephen Covey, a motivational writer, he counsels, "Begin with the end. Visualize yourself at your own funeral and listen in your imagination to what people say about you and your imagination about what people say. It will matter little what your net worth was. It will matter little how many times your name comes in the Only one of these things, leave behind a legacy of love. Is the world, or a part of it, a better place because you've been here before?" I'm not sure why, but I'm having to think. Hmm. I remember when I was in the fifth grade, I sang at the Little Methodist Church in Compton. And I got in there because they invited me. They had no idea who I was, but they wanted to get some young people in. And I sat next to a man who had sung bass very ably in the choir there for years and years. And I sat down next to him, and he taught me how to follow the bass line. Before that, I couldn't follow any line. When I was in the fifth grade, my two fifth grade classes at Mayo Elementary School in Compton put on the Christmas pageant. They came to me after the first rehearsal and asked me to stay in class and work on something on paper. It was the fact that I was not only off key, but loud. If I had been one of those, they might have let me stay. But I was out. So in the 10th grade, when the bass in the choir allowed me to sit in there and sing next to him and learn the parts, it was a great wonder to me, and I'm always appreciative of that person who did that for me. It didn't create a great musician, but set in motion a feel for music, a joy of voices singing together. And in my college years at the church I attended, I actually led the Sunday night singing. I was a better cheerleader than a singer, but they brought the voices. Think of the times you've been around to help people, where your gifts have come through to lead people in a good way, to make a difference among folks. Making a difference in small matters, the way I have tried to do, is one thing, but we know there are others in the course of our world that are changing in big ways. Martin Luther, in the 1500s of the town square Wittenberg, and the theological changes he called for. Martin Luther King Jr. at Selma, crossing the bridge and calling for changes. Sojourner Truth, speaking to the conscience of America about the travesty and the tragedy of racial discrimination and slavery. Greta Thunberg, stepping up to the podium at age 15 in the United Nations and telling it like it is. President Zelensky boldly going in where no one had expected him to go. Making a difference. That's what Jesus was doing in this passage. I look back at this biblical incident dramatically described, and what a difference Jesus made. What if he had not been there? Picture the scene without Jesus. Bloody, hateful, tragic. But Jesus stepped in and caused the men to be aware of their sexism. Jesus stepped in and caused the men and the onlookers to be aware of their ugly voyeurism. He made them realize by writing on the ground as if on a scroll that judgment was not theirs to render, but by God. Jesus made an unnamed woman here realize that someone cares. Jesus made them all aware of the forgiveness of our gracious God. This passage, which we're going to find in a moment, was left out of the New Testament. It wasn't originally in. We'll come to that later. This passage is congruent with the fundamental message of the Bible because it proclaims the authentic Christian message, which is a moral call to responsibility founded on free grace. No requirements required. That's the good news the church brought into the world 2,000 years ago. And what a wonderful church it was. If it were not there, Western civilization probably would have gone either into the lostness of Greco-Roman licentiousness or bound up in the legalism of Zoroastrian and Pharisaic philosophies. And while the church of the ages has often abandoned its call and not lived up to its promise, I'm so glad for a church like Fairview Community Church that proclaims, "Here comes Jesus, right into the middle of things, as in that temple courtyard of old, with a call to moral responsibility, yes, but founded and surrounded by free, gracious, merciful, renewing, uniting, celebrating divine love. If anyone asks you about this church, and you say, I don't think I know the right theological answers, all you need to say is, we seek to make a difference in people's lives with a call to moral responsibility based on absolute free grace. This church is not afraid of lifting the cross, nor ashamed to fly the flags of gay pride and Black Lives Matter. Now, the message today is made possible because someone in about the year 400 came in to confront the establishment. And here's what happened. The original things of the New Testament, in fact, the whole Bible and other literature of the Greco-Roman world, was passed on vocally and verbally before it was ever written down. And so they were practiced in that. And I've always liked to give the illustration. Octomali gazaligaz umpti umpti adi yahoo. Ink to mink diadigaz ink diumpti re yahoo. Wing wacky tricky tracky poo foo. Juicy wizzy skizzle wazzle. Wang tang. Dominorki Redlands. Ra ra Redlands. Dan and Judy know it better than I. We, as freshmen and women, we had to memorize that. And it's been a few years since we were there, right? Long time. And it still comes back, is there. So oral tradition was the way they tended to pass things on. And then they were eventually written down. And the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, were written somewhere near the year 90 up to 100. And so it was a few decades after Jesus' life and the early church, but they were written down. And when they were written down, they were then passed on by making copies. For 1,000 years until the Gutenberg press came along to print these things. And that when you and I were growing up, or at least some of us, and we were reading the King James Version of the Bible, this passage was there about Jesus confronting the people and bringing out to safety the woman so-called caught in adultery. But scholars and archaeologists, in digging into the most ancient manuscripts that have been discovered in the last 200 years, have found that in every one of those manuscripts, Codex Sinaiticus, Vaticanus, Leviticus, all those, none of them have this passage that we read from this morning. And if you open your Bible, like the one in the pew, it will usually either will put it in small print down below, or as in the Bibles of our pews, it'll say, most ancient manuscripts do not contain this story. So, what happened was, someone, somewhere, after the Bible was being recopied and recopied and used to the growing church in the first century or so, actually for three centuries, finally it appears. How did that happen? And the general understanding is that somebody in the manuscripts that were being of the Bible that were being recopied snuck in and put a written account of this oral tradition that had been passed on in one of the Bibles, and unknowingly, the scribe who came in put it down, next one put it down, and that's the strand that came through to the King James authorized version that our parents or us or somebody was used to years ago. But it wasn't originally there. Why was it kept out? Well, I think it's because, even though it's technically about sexual behavior, it's really about power, privilege, control. And for that reason, there were persons, powerful persons, men, I would have to say, who wanted this story when it was first there in the ancient days to go away, die a quiet demise. It's way too raw, way too honest, way too revealing, dangerous to those who would use religion as a sword to lord it over others. But at the same time, there were others caught up in the true spirit of Jesus that kept the story alive, underground, passing it along by oral tradition, especially among the oppressed and distressed and dispossessed, until finally, at the very time that the official church was rearming the forces of patriarchy and misogyny and legalism, about the year 400, some brave soul, maybe a monk, maybe a bishop, maybe a mother superior, maybe the monastery cleaning woman, snuck into the scriptorium where they were making copies of the Bible and inserted this story, and whoever didn't realize that just copied it on from there, copied it on from there. So ancient manuscripts don't have this story, but after the year 400, it's there. And aren't we glad? It's authentic, it goes back, it just didn't get put in the first. It was saved by people who felt it made something important to say. And in this story, saved perhaps by the 5th century AD, Jesus turns to the woman and says, "I call you to change your life for the better, but I do not condemn you." The only people Jesus condemns in this story are the condemners. The only people he finds intolerable, and he's gentle with it, are the intolerant. And speaking of condemners and intolerant, these men in the story do the very thing they would condemn. Their accusation of the woman about a sexual sin, but the ultimate sexual sin is to use another person as an object for physical gratitude or a demonstration of power. And that's exactly what these guys had been doing. They didn't care about the woman or anyone hurt in the triangle. They only wanted to use her as an object to experience pleasure and power. These are the sort that can be in our own Congress or in an Iranian theocracy that are usually powerless and impotent and use the misery of others, for example, women and migrants, to enhance their own sense of control and power. But Jesus turns the tables. The men thought they could get the best of Jesus. Instead, he, in the grace of God, bested them. They thought they could render judgment. Instead, judgment was rendered on them. They thought that the woman would serve to show Jesus' weakness. Instead, she served to reveal the wisdom and the power of Jesus, born of the very mercy of God. Thank God for this story. Suppressed, yet surprisingly now alive. But similar in this reading to the endings of some movies like Fatal Attraction, Wait Until Dark, The Sixth Sense, Knives Out, Us, there's an unexpected shock at the end. These threatened, fearful men, after that encounter with Jesus in which they walked away their heads down, they weren't through, for they raised their ugly head again, and "We'll teach you, Jesus, on your missions of mercy to mess with our taboos, our control, our fun at the expense of others. We'll find you and we'll kill you. We'll edge you out of our world and make sure there's no more meddling." And they, at Golgotha, mocked him as he hung there. They gloated over his agony. They breathed a sigh of relief as he breathed his last, and they thought they had finished him off, but they were so wrong. The tables were turned again. The only thing finished at the cross was the redemptive work of love, and the cross now, our cross is empty, and our cup is full, so let us rejoice, you wonderful people, this wonderful church, joining others out there, also ready to step in for grace and goodness, and as Jesus did in this passage, and as many have done in our lives, let's make a difference.